Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Golic Jr. on the Fan. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Appreciate you having me, man. How you doing?
Good, good. I mean, you know, it's New York, so everybody wants to talk Yankees and Mets. But I'm not on tomorrow, and the Jets will face the Patriots. So I wanted to powwow a little bit with you on that. I mean, right out the gate, let's talk Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is knocking off rust. I think he's only going to get better as the season goes along. But I look at this Patriots defense, and I'm like, I think that they're better than people gave them any credit for. People said they weren't going to win a game. And, I mean, so far they've gone up against Joe Burrow and Geno Smith. What do you expect to see out of the Patriots? Short week here, Thursday Night Football, home opener for the Jets versus Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think the Patriots have shown you this is still, even though Gerard Mayo's in year one as a head coach, an incredibly well-coached team on both sides of the football. I think defensively, that was blue-chip stock you were buying in terms of the Patriots on defense. And they've had guys like Keon White, their defensive lineman recently out of Georgia Tech, who seems to be taking that next step, insert himself as a playmaker up front on defense. We know, lost Matthew Judon before the season. They went out there and physically took it to the Seattle Seahawks last week in a way that embodies what that team is about. And then offensively, what Alex Van Pelt has been able to do around Jacoby Brissett is a really quality veteran quarterback who toes that line between backup and starter. They're going to run the rock. They're going to be able to do that. We know pass protection, certainly an area they can struggle. But if you're this Jets team, you got to bring your lunch pail and get ready for a physical outing, because the Patriots are going to make you feel them up front on both sides of the ball. And we know for Aaron Rodgers and this Jets team, offensively, that was the area most people had concerns about, what the offensive line's been able to do up front. So far, the returns on that have been pretty good for this point in the season. And then defensively, hey, you're dealing with the injury to Jermaine Johnson right now. You've had the holdout with Hassan Reddick going on at pass rusher. So there have been some question marks there for that defense. But ultimately, this is a game that if the Jets are going to get to go the places that they want to, this is a really good test at this point of the year, because the Patriots, you're absolutely right, have far exceeded most people's expectations for them early.
Yeah, it's a game that I think the Jets have to win. It's the home opener. There's so much anticipation for Aaron Rodgers running out on that field, but it won't all be on him. I think it's a fishy line here, a 6-point spread in favor of the Jets, but the over-under is 39.5. So it's like expected to be low scoring, but the Jets winning by a touchdown. C.J. Mosley is hurt. D.J. Reed is hurt. They're 50-50 to play. And when you think about Ramondre Stevenson running the ball, and you think about this Jets defense, what they looked at like against the 49ers, like I expect it to be back and forth. I expect the Patriots to be able to move the ball, score some points. I think it's going to be closer than a 6-point spread in favor of the Jets.
I would agree, and I think it could be one of those games that is a bit of a rock fight offensively, because we've seen as the Jets have been gelling on the offensive side of the football, it's been a little bit further, fewer and further between in terms of some of those connections with Garrett Wilson. But I'm with you, especially coming off a short week. That's way too many points given what this Patriots team has put on tape already. I think that line would have made a lot of sense going into the season when we all thought, hey, this team might be in contention for the number one overall pick or one of the worst teams in the league as they get ready for whenever the bridge is to their quarterback and one of their top overall draft picks in Drake May. But now you look at this team and go, all right, they still do a lot of the things that were quintessentially Patriots for so long. And you got to account for that if you're the Jets, but I expect a close game. I do expect a low scoring game, but it is one that ultimately the Jets have the firepower to win that New England just does not right now.
Yeah, agreed. On the other side of MetLife Stadium, the Giants fans are cooking up trades. They want to trade Daniel Jones for Bryce Young and let Bryce Young play the next 2 years until Archie Manning comes out, and they want to draft Archie Manning and let him be the new franchise quarterback. What do you say to that?
I mean, at this point, unfortunately, where you're at with the Giants is this roster would make that shuffling deck chairs in the Titanic. Like, bringing in Bryce Young would be bringing in a quarterback that's physically less capable of getting himself out of the jams that Daniel Jones is right now. The offensive line's not where it needs to be. The offense itself overall just has too many flaws. But at the very least, Daniel is big, a powerful athlete that can help himself out in those situations. Bryce Young, you're having to talk about come in and really rewiring a young man that the Panthers helped screw up a lot last year with the physical toll that he took. And I just don't think that the Giants are any place to do that. So putting your eyes towards the future and, hey, talking about, you know, Arch Manning or, hell, Quinn Ewers after what we've seen from him so far this year as the quarterback of the future that's not on your roster, I understand for the Giants at this point because it has been all bad there early on outside of Malik Nabers.
Yeah, I think they're better than they obviously showed in the first 2 weeks. And I look at their head coach. I'm assuming you watched Hard Knocks. And the way Brian Daboll presented in Hard Knocks, he seemed extremely comfortable. He literally had his feet up multiple times. It's like he's hanging out. And my message to him yesterday was, hey, no more feet up. Like, you should be uncomfortable. You shouldn't sleep until you get your first win. And when he meets the media the first week, he's saying, it's all on me. It starts with me. We got to be better. It falls on me. And then in the second week, you know, he's like eyeing the media members down. I'm looking at Brian Daboll like, hey, you got to coach them out of this. You were the coach of the year 2 years ago. And looking at the Giants' schedule, they could easily start off 0-8 in theory. And if that's the case, it's tank time, and you might not have a job. What do you think about Brian Daboll, especially with Shane Bowen coming in to replace Wink Martindale, who a lot of people think Wink Martindale, and the way that ended, that was all on Brian Daboll and him yelling and screaming and, you know, just having control of things. And then what do you think about him taking the play calling from Mike Kafka? Like, this guy has taken so much on and done so much and changed so much. If they're not successful, his seat should be hot. It's on him. They have to win. All the talk around Daniel Jones, I mean, benching Daniel Jones is not even in the question right now. It's about them finding a way to scheme and surprise some teams. I think they can beat the Browns. What do you think about Brian Daboll coaching his way out of this?
Yeah, you have a lot more faith in them against the Browns than I do based on what that Browns defense is capable of against that.
It's the home of the Giants. This is WFAN, home of the Giants. Got to have some faith.
Hey, you know what? Listen, more power to you there. I hope that's rewarded at some point. But I think you're right with Brian Daboll, the way that he's acted. And we saw some of the back and forth in the most recent press conference, going back and forth with the media about some of the decisions made late in that game. It sounds like a coach who understands and feels the pressure of his job being on the line right now. Taking back play calling, all these things are the things you do when you know your ass is on the line. You want two hands on the wheel. If you're going to go down, you want to go down at least swinging the bat, not with the bat on your back, with someone else working on your behalf. And that's a tough environment to work in when the only person you trust is yourself, because you know that's on the line. And so players can feel that. Like, everyone from the organization on down feels that sense of urgency. And when you're a team that's already undermanned personnel-wise, that's a tough environment to find success in.
Yeah, we've beaten the conversation into the ground, but they made history last week. 7 field goals against them, not one touchdown. They're the first team to score 3 touchdowns and lose in regulation like that. When it comes down to it, you have to be prepared. I've talked about it a bunch this week. I'm just like, how do you have a 37-year-old kicker that was injured last year where you had to go get Mason Crosby? This year he's hurt. You know that he's hurt. He's on the injury report. He goes through warm-ups. He's wincing during warm-ups. He hurts himself. And then you don't have a backup plan. It's almost like they found a way to lose that could have been avoided. Have you ever heard of anything like that? It's just like, I don't know how you don't have an emergency kicker. I've heard of Chad Ochocinco being able to kick for the Bengals and Eric Reed being able to kick for the Chiefs. It's like, how do you default into an offense that you're not confident in having to go for 2 and not having someone that can kick it through the uprights?
Yeah, I mean, emergency kicker is one thing if this was something that came out of nowhere, and I referenced the back and forth between Brian Daboll and the media about the emergency kicker, about, hey, you know, it was a hamstring that he pulled running after a tackle, but he already had the lower body injury, and how are we connected, and I'm not a doctor, and you're not a doctor, and all that stuff. Regardless is, yeah, you had a kicker with a lower body injury at a critical juncture that cost you the game. That's on the head coach for not having some plan in preparation. And again, to your point, when you're taking on all this added responsibility because you feel the pressure and the walls closing in around you, you end up missing things. It's a lot. There's a there's a lot of offensive play callers at head coach right now, and guys still maintain play calling. That's a really difficult thing to do, to go through and have to do all the CEO stuff during the week, all the stuff as the head of the organization, lead the whole team, and then game plan offensively to feel comfortable enough going out there to give your best team and your offense the best chance by calling plays. If you're a defensive coach calling the plays for the defense, that's a lot on someone's plate. You combine that with the sense of urgency that comes for anyone naturally when they feel, hey, my future might be on the line each and every week, each and every down. Then you tend to miss things, or you tend to gloss over stuff because you're worried about other things. And it's understandable, again, when you're taking on as much as Brian Daboll feels compelled to take on right now.
Yeah, they're 0-2. They absolutely can't go 0-3, but that might be in the cards. And I think if you end up going 0-5, it's tank time. It's time to really think about some changes and some stuff. I mean, thinking about changes, the Carolina Panthers going 0-2, they're a mess. I think David Tepper, he's getting exactly what he deserves. They have a new head coach in Canales. I think they're trying to figure it out. But, you know, I look at this NFL, and last year we saw so many backup quarterbacks. Here we are going into week three. Andy Dalton is starting. Malik Willis is starting. Skylar Thompson is starting. It's crazy to think about the injuries and the benchings and how quickly we get there in the NFL. Let's talk about the injuries. I've been saying it's because guys don't play in the preseason. And even guys being rusty, like Caleb Williams not playing as much in the preseason as like a C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, excuse me. Bryce Young not playing as much in the preseason as a C.J. Stroud. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, we're looking at this week three now where seasons are on the line. Joe Burrow in the Bengals, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. The NFL is wild. I think that teams have to start playing at least in that last game of the preseason to get ready to go. You can't use week one as a preseason because you lose there, you lose the next week, and now you're looking like a team that can't make the postseason.
Yeah, I think at the same time, like, ascribing too much to the preseason in terms of injuries is an area that I'm just not comfortable going. Like, these are high-priced winning machines in the NFL. If playing guys in the preseason had history and data they collected that showed it would give a lower chance of injury once the regular season started, they would play more people in the preseason. This is a violent game where the ball bounces weird. Stuff happens like this sometimes when the collisions are this vicious based on the level of athlete that we're dealing with now and the speed of the game. So it's a tough part of it. But at the same time, your point about slow starts is well served. You've got some teams, though, that are kind of comfortable in this mode, like the Bengals. Used to go an 0-2. It's been beaten in the ground by now, but Joe Burrow in the 5 years he's been in the NFL has won one game in weeks 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And yet they're a team that has contended for Super Bowls before. They took Kansas City down to the wire, all that stuff. So some teams are more comfortable in it than others, but part of this is also organizational competency. The Panthers are a perfect example of that. You got a meddling owner who's got a history of a quick trigger finger. We can't act surprised that they have screwed up another quarterback and now tried to move on from that in most people's estimation too soon, because that's what happens when you've got an owner that's not comfortable letting the football people do what he hired them to do. On the other side of that, you got Green Bay and Malik Willis, where, hey, weird bounce. Like, hey, Jordan Love, no amount of preseason game was going to prevent him from getting his MCL rolled up on or whatever it was in his knee. But now them overcoming that last game, Matt LaFleur coached his ass off around Malik Willis, changed the nature of their offense, ran the ball about 80% of the time, put a bunch of spread option stuff in that you see in college to try and help his quarterback get through that game and maximize his skill, and gave him confidence. Malik Willis made throws in that game we didn't see in Tennessee, because somewhere along the line there, he was empowered enough by this coach to go out and execute with a team that clearly believed in him enough for him to believe in himself. So you're going to see in a lot of these instances, Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota with Sam Darnold right now, a staff that believes in the players, empowers them, and offers a disguised schematic advantage with some of the other parts of the roster they built up around him, can give some of these guys a chance to succeed and weather the storm until they get the cavalry back.
Okay, last thing for you. I want to play a quick game. It's are they for real or are they not with these 2-0 teams? And you can say whether they're for real or not, and then give me one sentence on why. So let's start with the Seattle Seahawks. They're 2-0. Are they for real or not?
They're for real, I think, especially because the Rams look like they're going to be too beat up to party for most of the season. That second spot in the NFC West is wide open. Mike McDonald's come in early on defense and really set the foundation, oddly enough, in the secondary, giving up some rushing yards right now, but I think they've got the personnel by the end of the year to get better in that area, even if they won't be perfect. And then offensively, you saw in the last game, the run game there, still a work in progress. I worry about them a bit late in the season, being a team that could maybe make the playoffs or win a game in the playoffs. But being in the mix in year one for Mike McDonald, very possible the way Geno Smith's playing ball right now and with the way that Jaxon Smith-Njigba is coming along in a wide receiver room that's already chock full of talent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kevin O'Connell, Brian Flores, and the Minnesota Vikings. Are they for real or not?
I'm going to say for real. Brian Flores wants to kill you with hammers on the defensive side of the football, and he went up against one of the best minds, if not the best offensive play caller in the sport, and Kyle Shanahan, who, yeah, was down a couple of weapons, but still has more than most, and has a starting quarterback, and made them look a way that we don't often see with that offense. You combine it with, hey, listen, you're banged up on offense right now if you're Minnesota. Jordan Addison's been dealing with the ankle. Justin Jefferson goes out with a quad, and you still find a way to be productive in that game. I think they're absolutely for real right now in a very crowded NFC North.
Okay, I gave you two from the NFC. Let's go with two from the AFC. The Los Angeles Chargers, led by Mr. Harbaugh and those guys, are they for real or not?
I'm going to say not in terms of playoff contention yet. I think looking at the opponents for the first couple of weeks gives me a bit of pause about saying they're all the way back. For Justin Herbert in this offense, we've seen a little bit of Ladd McConkey show up. Quentin Johnston, their former first-round pick, also had a big game this last week. But I do wonder if they're dynamic enough in that area to hold out. Love seeing the way that they've reset the foundations offensively and on the defensive line. I do always have worries about the Chargers staying healthy in those areas. And quite honestly, that would be the biggest win for the Harbaugh regime in the early going, is if from a sports medicine side, they were able to keep their guys on the field longer at the premier positions that have traditionally snake-bit them.
Okay, one more. Mike Tomlin said he's not going to tell you the ingredients of the hot dog. You might not like it, but the Steelers start 2-0, and that's a good way to get another winning record on the season. Are the Steelers for real or not?
I'm going to say not right now. I still think they're probably going to finish above 500. They can flirt with the playoffs, but we know the line is it's on the walls in the Southside facility in Pittsburgh. The standard is the standard. They're used to lifting trophies. Their fan base has anxiety about winning games. And right now, while the offense is getting by, I just don't think that they're potent enough to get you the wins down the stretch. If Cincinnati figures it out, I think when the Baltimore Ravens figure it out, and I think then, even with T.J. Watt and that defense playing as well as they are, you're going to run into some problems that are a bit outside your weight class still with this roster offensively.
Awesome. Mike Golic Jr., ladies and gentlemen. Mike, you're the man. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.